Welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast, where we learn that there is more than one way to train, eat, and live. I'm your host, Jimmy Kim, and thank you so much for tuning in. If this is your first time checking out the show, I share stories of people from all walks of life. We get to see what their views of fitness, food, and health are, and how they manage to make it all work and fit into their lives. So far, I've had the pleasure of sharing stories of parents, directors of large companies, a young millennial couple, and an owner of a swim school. In today's episode, I get to sit down and talk with another fellow coach in the fitness industry, Graham Gentle. This one got me really psyched up because Graham and I have been coaching others in fitness roughly around the same amount of time, give or take 8 years. Yet we have two very different stories on how and why we decided to become coaches. But before I get into today's episode, I want to let you know that Dave Stewart's new workout is available online at remixmyfitness.com. If you haven't checked it out, every Thursday you get to literally follow one of my online coaching clients, Dave Stewart's 12-week fitness journey. I post his workouts and missions on the site, but they're only available for 1 week. You just need to visit remixmyfitness.com and subscribe to the site, and you'll get Dave's latest mission. This week, I have a 20-minute bodyweight workout that you can do at home, at the office, or any nearby park. It's only going to be available for the next few days before I take it down, so get it while you can. Like I've mentioned before, I've been coaching for a little bit over 8 years now. But I've been training myself to lose weight from the earliest that I can remember. The majority of my life, I struggled with my confidence and body image. I was that kid and the adult who was always picked last on any team, or if I was lucky, second last. I was always too embarrassed to take off my shirt on the beach or at the pool because of my rolls, my man boobs, my stretch marks, you name it. I could rarely make it through a day without someone giving me some sort of advice on how to lose weight or what to eat or what I should do. My weight ballooned to almost over 270 pounds, and it probably would have kept going until I remixed my fitness. After trying to lose weight for 20 years, I decided to stop stepping on the scale and making weight loss my main goal. Funny enough, when I did that, that's when I started to lose the most weight. I didn't step on a scale for almost 2 years, but when I had to sign up to a jiu-jitsu competition, I had to know which weight class I was planning to compete in. And when I did, I saw that I was 70 pounds less than I was 2 years prior. I can honestly say I didn't care. It barely fazed me how much weight I lost. But it did trigger a thought that there must be others out there who have tried before like me to lose weight but failed. And I wanted to help those people find not just success, but to find peace within themselves. Graham Gentle, on the other hand, was almost on the opposite end of the spectrum, where he wasn't always the biggest or the strongest, but he was very athletic, grew up playing competitive tennis, could pick up any sport fairly quickly. Later, he went through a growth spurt that only further complemented his natural athletic ability. He didn't think that coaching others would be something that he'd be doing to make a living. In fact, he went to culinary school and he tried his hand on a few different gigs, but ultimately was inspired by his brother to join him in the fitness industry. Graham started competitive lifting, found his own failures, learned from his mistakes, but ultimately success as well. He now shares that knowledge with others as a coach full-time. And you can follow him at Graham Gentle on Instagram. And that's Graham, G-R-A-E-M-E-G-E-N-T-L-E. Graham Gentle. In our conversation, we cover a lot, and I wish I had more time with Graham because we get into all sorts of things. Dealing with nerves during competition, misconceptions and stigmas of what it's like to be a trainer or a coach in the fitness industry, and how he sets his own fitness goals, which I think most people would find shocking, and Graham's personal and professional philosophy to succeed at any goal. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did or you didn't, I would love to hear from you. You can hit me up on the comments field on iTunes, or you can join our private Facebook community where I'm there answering questions. Members are there sharing tips and helping each other stay motivated, and I provide exclusive content to this group. So check it out, and you can connect with me at bit.ly/remixmyfitness. So with that, let's get on with today's show. I want to welcome back to the Remix My Fitness podcast is Graham Gentle. Graham, what's going on, bud?
Hey, not much, man. Thanks for having me again. How you doing?
Yeah, and I said welcome back because we actually tried this before and we ran into some technical difficulties and decided to redo this because it was so good. I didn't want people to miss out on what you were saying.
So, all right.
Yeah, hopefully we got all that squared up.
So this time we'll get it down this time.
Yeah, we'll get it down. So I just kind of want to get into it. So Graham, why don't you share a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name is Graham Gentle. I'm 32 years old. I've been in the fitness industry, being a strength and conditioning coach for about, I'd say, 8 to 9 years now. Again, I just probably say that like athletics and sports and training has been a part of my life since I could remember.
Right. Because previous to this, you actually did, you were like a line cook, you were a bartender. And
yep,
then
I grew up in the, didn't grow up, sorry. After high school, I went into the culinary industry. And then went to school for culinary arts and was in kitchens for a few years. And then transitioned from the kitchen to bartending. And then transitioned from there into the fitness industry.
Oh, that's amazing. What we talked about the first time we got together, I think would be really interesting is actually your story, how you got into competitive lifting. So you went from being, just as a short recap here, you went from being a line cook, and then you were thinking about getting out of the game, and you became a bartender, right?
Is that? Yep.
You became a bartender, and you were doing that, but your brother was also training, and you've been working out. You're an athlete when you're in your younger years. I mean, you're still young. You were an athlete, all that stuff. So, then you found yourself into training, right? Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So yeah, the way it worked is as I was bartending, it was just one of those things where I was just like, I wasn't getting any enjoyment. The money was really good, but there was no sense of like satisfactory throughout the job. And at the time, my brother and I were living together, and he was already a strength and conditioning coach, and he already had a business going. And the house that we lived in, we had gutted our garage, and we had turned that into a gym. So we had a lot of clients coming to the house, and we ourselves were training at the house. So, I mean, just following kind of like in his footsteps, my brother's a big influence on my life and a big mentor to me. I was able to learn a lot from him growing up because as he was perfecting his craft, he would kind of use me as like his like guinea pig to test certain training methods or programs out on and to practice his coaching craft as well on how to cue individuals and get them to perform the movements right. So once he was doing that to me, I started to fall in love with it more and more. And I was very interested on how these things affected your everyday kind of life and transition into sport. Because like you said, I was a competitive athlete growing up. I competed in soccer, track and field, swimming. But tennis was one of the ones that I kind of held on to from a young age and competed at that at a fairly high level. And I had noticed that, again, going through training, it was improving my tennis game. So again, I fell in love with the movement and training and decided to just turn a passion into a career. Went back to school, got educated, did certifications and continuing to do certifications and just turned that into a business, started picking up clients. Cause at the beginning I was just training friends. And then that turned into word of mouth. And once I felt like I had a strong enough platform where I could start to obviously make income and revenue off of this, I would charge people and teach classes and it snowballed from there.
Mm-hmm. And I guess a question for you before we get into your competitive lifting, which was, if you were so into tennis, why didn't you gravitate towards coaching tennis and instead of teaching people how to lift weights and move their body? Why the fascination with that? Or why niche into that instead of niching into tennis is something that you're so passionate about and that you competed in?
I don't know. It's a good question. I guess when I came to the end of my competitive tennis endeavors, I was a bit turned off by the sport. because I've been doing it for so long and it put so many hours in. So I was probably looking for a new platform to test my abilities and stuff like that. And then, yeah, my brother, again, having an influence on my life, as he continued to perfect his craft, he got into the sport of Olympic weightlifting. And he went and sought the coaching from a gentleman named Pierre Roy, who is one of Canada's like godfathers of weightlifting, an unbelievable coach. And he worked with other coaches like Hanny Kanema, Alexander Varbanov, who was an Olympic medalist and a world record holder in the sport. And again, watching him practice that new skill, I was like, well, hey, this looks fun and challenging. So why not try and do it? I went to his first competition and it was a lot of fun to watch. And even when I started practicing this new skill, I never had the intentions of competing in it ever. At this point in my life, I was just like, I just want to learn a new skill, test myself, and see what happens. But once learning it, it was very challenging and rewarding all at the same time. I got to push myself, and it reminded me a lot like tennis, because it's a very solo individual sport where, I mean, if you're successful, you have yourself to thank. If you're not successful, you have yourself to blame. So it was fun in that sense and challenging in that sense. But I remember after a while, some friends and coaches were like, well, why don't you just like try and compete? And, you know, I gave into it and I said, sure, why not? And my first competition, I competed in the 85 kilo weight class. But my first competition, I went in to try and compete in the 77 kilo weight class. And I was never one to cut weight. I've never had to make a weight class or anything like that. So I didn't put too much effort into really paying attention to my weight. Made a mistake, and I was when I weighed in, I was, I think, 2 kilos overweight. So I got bumped up to the 85 kilo weight class, which is the weight class that I compete in now. And I ended up placing third. So I was pretty happy to do that well against the bigger weight class. And then also looking at the numbers at the 77 kilo weight class, if I had made weight, I would have won that weight class. So that gave me, you know, confidence and motivation to say, hey, why not take this a little bit more serious, put some time in and keep going. And I did, and I was successful within competitions, coming in first a couple times, second, third. So I had a lot of fun doing it. And then I made my way up to the provincial level, and I placed fifth in Ontario against the 85 kilo weight class. And this may be a bit biased on my end, but the 85 kilo weight class is probably one of the most difficult weight classes, because it's your average size for a male, so it has the most competitors usually. But again, I was very happy with what I was able to accomplish within the time period that I had put out, because I had only been practicing and learning this new skill for maybe 3 years at the time, 4 years at the time. So, and in my opinion, that's fairly short to make it to that level of any sport, and I did what I was able to do.
That's amazing. So your first competition, you were supposed to compete at 77 kilos, but because you were 2 kilos over, they bumped you up to 85 kilos. Yeah. So that's about like 18 pounds, right? About 18 pounds.
Oh, no, 20 no, pounds. No.
No?
So.
It is. I think it's 85 minus 77. Times 2.2,
17.6
pounds.
No, I guess.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So, that's a big size difference. You know, still, like, were the guys, like, significantly bigger at that weight class? When you saw the 77 kilo, people were like, all right, I think I can hang with these people. And then you went to 85, they were just, like, monstrous?
Yeah, there was definitely a size difference between them. And I apologize. I made the mistake. The weight classes, I made an incorrect thing. It was 79. 79, yeah, and 85. I apologize.
Okay.
Because the weight classes in weightlifting, sorry, they've changed over the years due to the corruption in the Olympics. So what happens is they'll try to, like, clean the slate, by making new weight classes, getting rid of old weight classes and then making new weight classes. And they just actually recently have changed the weight classes again, due to, again, just like too much doping and the Olympics and everything like that. So I apologize to all the listeners. It's early in the morning. Oh, no, not that early, so I can't even use that excuse. But yeah.
It's okay. Mistakes happen. We're allowed to make mistakes, man, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You better believe we are.
So instead of being discouraged, you actually found motivation. Because I'll tell you, my first competition that I ever competed in jiu-jitsu, the very first one I ever did, I tore my pectoral muscle. I tore my right chest, and now I walk around with only half a right chest. There's like a giant indent that I walk around in. So,
oh wow.
Yeah. And I did terribly. You know, it was awful. I was a much bigger person back then. I competed in the super ultra heavyweight class. That's what it was called. And that was I think I'm going to get this wrong, but it was like 230 and then unlimited. But for me, I was like on the smaller scale of the 230 compared to the 6 foot giants. They were just massive. They were huge. They were huge. And this guy took me down, and I heard something rip, and I thought it was my pants or like my gi or something. And
oh god!
As he was turning his body, I my arm was going. I could hear it rip even more. I was like, okay, that's not right.
That is like a inherent factor in a sport such as jiu-jitsu or any combat sport for that matter. I mean, the whole point of the sport is to inflict damage to a degree to get the opponent to give up, right?
Sure. So I mean that a lot to do with you talk about your inexperience, my inexperience as well, right? I didn't realize a competition you would, I'm not sure if it's like this for weightlifting, for competitive weightlifting, but there's, if it says you're going to start at 10 o'clock, you don't actually start at 10 o'clock. You start at, you know, at that time, jiu-jitsu was very, in Canada, was very disorganized.
Yeah.
And you come in for your start time, but you wouldn't compete till like 2 o'clock. I think I remember I went in there like at 9 and I didn't compete until like 4 p.m.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for weightlifting, they give you weight windows in the sense of you have a window to weigh in. Mm-hmm. And then they usually say that your flight starts at 12 o'clock. And within competition, when a flight starts, all the competitors kind of come out, they get introduced. They go backstage, and then some official will come backstage and say, okay, you have 10 minutes before the first lifter hits the platform. So that's the time when everybody obviously starts to warm up. So there wasn't a huge delay, and you could usually have a pretty good judgment of time as far as like when you'll be lifting and when you have to be ready for.
So 10 minutes before you lift, what kinds of things are you doing? Like you're about to lift some really heavy stuff. So at 79 kilos, or sorry, at when you competed at 85 kilos, like give us an idea of how much you're actually looking to lift. And 10 minutes before you're going to do this lift, what kinds of things are you doing? What's going through your mind?
Well, as far as like what like you're going to lift is going to be relative to like the person. Right, you should be lifting numbers that you're able to hit in practice, with the same intentions of trying to potentially set a new personal record while in competition. But personally, for snatch, I was snatching anywhere from like 105 to 115 kilos in competition. My all-time best was 120. And for clean and jerk, anywhere from like 125 to 140, in competition. So, yeah, how much those people should be lifting is all going to be relative to the individual. But I mean, the top guys, they can snatch anywhere from, again, like 130, 40, even 50, and clean and jerking 160, 70, 80, maybe even 90 kilos. The top guys who are at like the national level in the world, and even in Canada. So as far as what I would do prior to lifting the weights, I mean, through practice by this point, you have a system that you go through for warm up. And before your flight even starts, you're already like stretching and stuff like that, mobilizing to make sure that once it even comes time for your flight, you can just start grabbing a bar and going through your routine. But Yeah, warm up would consist of barbell movements and then just slowly progressing up to what you were about to lift on the platform.
One of the things that my jiu-jitsu coach, George Brito, something that I've heard him mention a few times before competing is run through, before you compete, do your warm-up just like you would do in class. Like, do the exact same thing. Make yourself feel comfortable. Like would you say that you run through your warm-ups similar to how you run them when you're in practice?
Absolutely. Consistency is key, and composure is a big thing. I mean, you don't want to... The only thing that has changed is the environment that you are in. You've done this so many times in your normal training gym that the only difference is it's just a new visual setting. So make things consistent. Don't think about it any different. Do the same warm-up that you would do. Think the same things that you would think. Approach it the same way that you would approach it. Well, maybe approaching it with a little bit more intent, depending how you deal with pressure and nerves and stuff like that. The approach may be a little bit different, but you want to be consistent as possible throughout all that stuff, because that's what's going to lead into a successful competition. If that's successful in the training room, why wouldn't it be successful here?
Mm-hmm. That's a really great point. So do you get nervous at all? Because I know I get crazy nervous before any competition.
Oh yeah, big time. But I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Like, I mean, I think you want nerves. You want nerves because I think that they help with like keeping you sharp and keeping your reaction time there and all these things. Like, I mean, you know the term, like you have butterflies, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you want to have them fly in formation. You want to have them all moving in kind of like unison, because nerves can, in my opinion, make you and break you at the same time. Mm-hmm. I remember for tennis matches, I would get extremely nervous before a match. And even at the beginning of the match, I'd get nervous. But sometimes tennis matches can be so long, at a certain point, you're just like on autopilot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not thinking. Where weightlifting, the actual lift when you're out there, it's over in like 2 seconds. So through the tennis, I think that helped me a lot, that when I approached weightlifting to begin with, I was already fairly good at dealing with stress and handling my nerves and stuff like that. So yeah, I do get nervous, but I think it's a good thing.
Yeah. And I really like your analogy there, butterflies flying in one formation. That's amazing.
That's not me. I heard it from a movie or another coach or something like that. But yeah, when I heard it, it stuck. And I was like, that's exactly how it should be.
Well, I can tell you it's going to stick with me. And I know I'm going to use that at some point, probably even today, man. So yeah. I'll definitely give you kudos. And if someone asks where that was from, I'll say it was from some movie or something.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah. So look, Rap, you know, this podcast that I have is about me sharing stories of different people from different walks of life doing different things. And it just so happens that we are in the same industry together. We're coaches, we train individuals, we train groups, we train athletes. And, you know, I think this is really great. I think a lot of people get a lot out of hearing your story on how to compete, but also what your life is like to be a trainer. I think we there's a lot of stigmas, a lot of taboos, and a lot of misconceptions of, I guess, who we are and how we go about our lives. It's something that I talked about in the first part, where I was always really overweight, and it was a struggle for me to try to lose the weight my whole life. And now that I've lost the weight, I go visit the same friend's house or the same family member's house, and they'll say like, sorry, there's I don't have any healthy snacks for you, or I don't have anything that you can eat. And I'll see like a bag of Doritos or a bag of chips, and like, yeah, I eat chips, you know, why can't I have a beer in this fridge? Like, you know, do you run into those things yourself at all? Or
like some people, they obviously they have this misconception that that all trainers live like a very like strict regimented life, and they do no wrong. And that's not the case. I mean, we're all humans. We all have vices. But yeah, no, I don't run into too many times when like friends, because they already know. No friends are like, hey, sorry, man, I don't have anything for you to eat, because they'll know that I'll have a I'll have chips and I'll have snacks and I'll have burgers and all that stuff. But you know, I'll get the random person that I meet for the first time that doesn't know me too well, and they'll usually make some assumption like that or a comment that is just not true.
Yeah, we'll get into this in a second, but you know, like I said in the first, I think I said it multiple times the first time we talked, but you're one of those people that when I was growing up, I just hated. You know, good looking dude, super jacked, lifted like 2 pounds and your bicep grew like 5 inches, you know? And for that one, I want to say like, I hate you still. I hate you still.
I love you, buddy.
But for me, you know, like the same with me, these are friends that I've been friends with 20 years, 25 years, and they've known me, you know, and they knew me when I used to drink a lot of beer and crave on fast food. And it's not so much, I'm not so worried about them, you know, saying like, I don't have any healthy snacks for you, but I'll tell you what I feel. I really feel them, they're worried about that I'm judging them. So I had an example where somebody, I was over at a friend's house and his wife was on her way home. And she was home, but people saw the car and she didn't come out for like 15, 20 minutes. And she came back in and everyone was like, hey, what happened to you? We saw you in the car. She was like, oh, I was busy. And her kids ratted on her, who was in the car, said, hey, mom ate McDonald's in the car because she heard Jimmy was here. Like, I'm going to judge her for eating like McDonald's. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like I've never eaten McDonald's in my life. My kids love McDonald's.
I mean, it's so independent. I mean, it's not one of those things where like McDonald's should not be consumed every day by any means. But I mean, it's one of those things where like this industry, there's very, very little black and white. There's so many shades of gray. A lot of time I'll say whenever somebody asks me anything, whether it is dealing with like fitness and health and nutrition and all those things, my answer is usually like, well, it depends. So even when it comes to like food and weight loss and nutrition and all these things, and I'm no expert, but again, I don't think eating a pizza or McDonald's or whatever is going to negatively affect you too much in the long run, depending on your specific circumstance and situation. Like, obviously, I wouldn't say that to somebody who is fairly obese and has some potential, like, life-threatening, like, illnesses that could develop. But if it's somebody who is, you know, in fairly good shape and trains and is fairly conscious of their eating habits on the regular, smashing down a Big Mac is not going to kill you. And it shouldn't be. You shouldn't be embarrassed to do it, and you shouldn't feel bad about it, because the whole other side of like the negative stress that can be associated with eating that and feeling guilty could actually do more damage than the food itself.
And I'm so happy you mentioned that, because it's something that I'm sure you hear and I hear all the time, where they say, where one of your clients that you're coaching says, oh, you know, I was so bad this weekend. I ate this food and I feel so guilty. And I always tell people, why are you feeling guilty about eating food? Yeah. Like, I'm sure it must have tasted good. And now you're ruining all that by saying, oh man, I feel so crappy. I'm so guilty. I ate this French fry, you know, something like that. Yeah. I never feel guilty eating food. It's so good.
Absolutely. But again, this is what I mean, right? They're like, it always depends on like the circumstance, in the sense of like, you and I don't feel guilty because we're not in any like health risks or anything like that. So somebody who may have high cholesterol or high blood pressure, who is not supposed to be eating anything like that, they may feel a little bit more guilty by doing so. But it's also one of those things of like being a grown adult, you didn't feel guilty doing it, like the action of actually going and paying for the food and eating it. So don't feel guilty now.
Yeah.
If anything, I'd just be like, I ate it. All right, let's get back on track with what I was supposed to be doing.
For sure. So if I can step back a little bit and just talk about your history just a little bit, which is you were a tall, skinny guy for the majority, not majority, but for a portion of your life. And then you just shot up in height and you're someone we consider like a
like an ectomorph.
You were like an ectomorph. right? Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're an ectomorph, and then you turn into a mesomorph.
Yes, correct, correct.
Right, and yeah. So
yeah, so well, I wasn't tall and skinny. I mean, to be honest, I was a pipsqueak. I was short and skinny for the most part of my youth growing up. But I want to say, like, I was short, but like athletic, not like muscularly like athletic, but you could tell that I played sports. I wasn't like scrawny, but I was just a skinnier dude. And then it was around grade, like I was probably pretty late, grade, like end of like grade 10, 11. I started to grow a little bit in height, but still more so on the slimmer athletic side. And for your listeners that are listening, an ectomorph is just an individual who is a fairly thin build and has a harder time gaining muscle. A mesomorph is kind of just like right down into the middle of that. Endomorph is on the other side of the spectrum, somebody who is, again, a larger frame and has a harder time getting rid of it.
And then there's always like the in-betweens, like there's that ecto-endo and then the...
Yeah, exactly. You know,
ecto-meso and the meso-endo, right? There's always that, right?
There's a whole spectrum in between those.
Yeah, and you know, you're a naturally gifted, athlete, right?
I know
you're shy to say that, but I could tell you were just built to lift stuff or play tennis. Like I'll give my example. I got to try really, really hard, and I'm not saying that you don't need to try really, really hard. I know you. I know your work ethic. You work really hard, but you know it took I think a little bit more motivation or a little bit more for me to get going.
Well, like I mean, look, like just like coming down to like being an ectomorph and usually always having like an athletic frame, it comes down to like genetics as well. Like, I mean, both my parents were athletes. My mom was like a runner and my dad was a tennis player. So like being born, my fibers in my body to my genetic code, to my metabolism, those things were all kind of set in place to, like to begin with. And from a child, my parents being athletes, they both like pushed us into athletic endeavors and challenges and stuff like that. So from a little kid, I was always moving and playing and challenging myself. And I usually picked up skills fairly quick. I was always usually okay at everything that I put my hands on as far as when it came to athletic ability. But again, like you said, that doesn't mean that I didn't have to try and put in my work and get my hours in. It was just more motivating to me, I guess, because like from the beginning, I was fairly good at these things quite quick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that has now spurred into, you know, all that knowledge and all that experience has made you a really great coach. And I'm curious, how do you stay motivated? Like, you've done so much. You've done so many different things. You and I live in a gym or some sort of facility, or we're talking working out. Looking up working out, do you ever get burnt out and to like actually do something?
Definitely. Oh yeah, for sure you get burnt out. I mean, I stay motivated because I'm so curious about movements and how to make things better and how to apply different skills or methods into training. So I'm usually always able to stay fairly motivated because I like challenging myself. I love to learn and movement is medicine. If you continuously move, you're going to feel good. As long as you're moving right, you're going to feel good and you're usually going to do better. But to say like that I don't get burnt out is not true. I mean, again, we're humans, so we putting in a lot of hours, you definitely get burnt out. But that's why like self-awareness, recovery, rest, all those things play such an important role in your ability to get in, day out and put the work in that you need to put in. I do get burnt out, and it'll be a combination of training a lot plus working. Like you said, we're in this industry, so I live in the gym. If I'm not training, I'm coaching, and both those things again revolve around a gym. Now I do have a social life. I don't sleep at the gym and I'm not there like 24/7, 365, but for the majority of the part, yeah, I'm there. So just the accumulation of just life and life stresses, they burn out, but you have to be able to recognize when that is like happening, and you need to make sure that you are taking the time for yourself to recharge and recover so that you can stay motivated, stay hungry, and continue to do what you do.
Mm-hmm. And you do a really good job of, I think, you do a really good job of remixing your routine. So a lot of the times you are, I would say your general schedule would be some sort of lifting or gym workout, right? Because you like to do that. And then the other times you're playing tennis in the winter, you're snowboarding, you surf, and look, you don't have to be an expert in all those things, but you break up your routine by doing those things, right?
Yeah, I think, again, like getting as much tools under your tool belt is going to be the most beneficial. Now, with that being said, when I'm in competition mode and I'm getting ready for like a weightlifting competition, it's weightlifting. I still do keep other things in there just to make sure that like movement patterns aren't diminishing, but it's never at the same intensity. When I'm competing in weightlifting, it's just solely focused on improving the skills that I need to perform in the sport. Outside of competition though, yeah, I try to stay as versatile as I possibly can. Like with doing the things you said, like in the summer, I'm playing tennis a lot. In the winter, I'll go snowboarding. When I'm on vacation, I'll go surfing. And I mean, to get better at any skill, you need to put in practice. So it's not like I've just like picked those things up and just, I was able to just to go all out in them. But like we said before, I was usually pretty quick with picking up those skills. So I do have the benefit of, you know, good awareness and movement and stuff like that I was able to enjoy those things to keep my skill set fairly versatile, because you don't want, in my opinion, you don't want to get stuck into one plane of motion too much. Like, I mean, your body can move in so many different ways. So within reason, you need to explore those movements. But again, like as a coach, I obviously apply a right like progression scheme to these things so that I am learning and progressing along the way, and so that I don't hurt myself. Because I mean, at the end of the day, as humans, we're only getting older. Things start to slow down, things get weaker, but I want to make that aging process as enjoyable and as slow as possible. So I think that exploring the most amount of movement is what's going to be the best thing for most individuals.
To shift here, when it's easy when we have like a, this is the date we're going to compete this day, so I have 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks to train for it. But when you're not competing, how do you stay motivated, how do you set your next goals if you know you don't have a competition coming up for the next 6 months or a year or anything like that?
Well, I mean, for me, goals can be very micro and macro. Obviously, you can have long-term goals, but before you achieve those goals, there may be a bunch of other goals that you need to hit before that's even the big-term goal is even possible. So, like when I'm not in competition, it can be everything from just improving balance on a certain position, or improving awareness on a certain position, or trying to feel out a movement more. It keeps me motivated to still get in there and try and explore these things out, because I mean, when people have goals, they're usually like weight driven or like fat loss driven, if you know what I mean. It's either like, I want to set a new bench press PR, or I want to lose X amount of pounds. But I look at everything in between, from, again, being able to like, I want to hold this position for 5 more seconds than I could before. I want to see if I can get more flexion in my ankle by a couple inches, centimeters, millimeters for that matter. So, I mean, it's fairly easy for me to have some sort of goal that I'm working for, or something that I'm specifically trying to achieve. But with that being said, I also do allow myself the freedom of having no goals at all, and just playing and exploring with movements. For a while, a couple of years ago, there was a couple of coaches and myself at the gym that we kept calling ourselves Team No Goals. Because like we would always just come into the gym and just say, hey, what do we feel like doing today? Like with having no structure in place. And a lot of times that freedom and that playful approach to training allows you to have a lot of fun and keep going and stay hungry to explore different things. But when it comes down to, you know, really like improving something or like I said, getting ready for competition, the mindset and the approach would change or switch back over.
Right. And I love that. I love that team no goals, because I myself too, like I from my own personal fitness, it's I'll go through periodizations of 6 weeks or 8 weeks of something that I want to work on, and particularly when it comes to like lifting. But the other times it's just, I just kind of free flow into, okay, how does my body feel today? Oh, my lower back's tight. So I'm going to do a couple glute drills, hip drills, abdominal drills, lower back drills to kind of get that loose. And that's my daily goal, right? And yeah. It sounds like you're very similar. You kind of, plus we're in the industry. So we were very nitpicky, especially with ourselves, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, we have the benefit of the experience of knowing how to listen and cater to what our body and our brains are saying. So being able to kind of modify on the fly and is something that we usually don't have a problem with. But with that being said, I mean, some individuals, again, like somebody who is starting brand new, they need the structure. They need the guidance. You don't want to necessarily leave them up to their own devices, because they may work on things that they like working on and avoid things that they don't like working on when it needs to be the opposite. And then some people just really enjoy having that structure. So maybe it's just not as an intensive a goal, but they just need to be kind of told what to do. Programs and goals and stuff like that are beneficial. But again, like you're saying, like, I mean, you'll hit a block of training, but then just kind of like aimlessly just do movement and just like kind of listen to what your body's saying or asking you what it wants to do. So it's good
and
stuff.
One thing I like about the team no go to is I think it's hard to be playful in the weight room, and that having that mindset of, all right, what do we want to work on today? And just having that freedom just to be able to do that. And that's a really fun way to make the weight room fun.
What are the things that I'm allowed to play with?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I want to learn a backflip. A no hands backflip, and I'm getting coached or like working on it right now and checking.
This is something that you're actually actively working on right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So knowing that, I'm not just gonna go into a gym by myself and just say, "All right, here we go. I want to play," and just attempt a backflip and risk the chance of smashing my head and breaking my back or my neck or something like that. So I know that that kind of play is not in my skill set yet. So I'm never going to try that until I've been given enough guidance or the green light to say, or enough confidence to know that I'm going to try it and I'm going to be successful with it. So you have to obviously know your skill set, play within that. And if you want to explore more movement, you have to learn new skills.
Very cool. And out of curiosity, why are you trying to learn a backflip?
Oh, just because I think it's badass. Purely just because I think it looks cool.
Yeah, and how close are you to this?
Confidence is a big thing. So, again, like I said, the weight room is dangerous. And, like, even things like weightlifting, like, it's scary. I remember when I was first learning weightlifting, you're throwing these weights over your head, and they could come crashing down on you and really do some damage. So I remember there was a point, and, I mean, it's very common that you hear, like, that people will, like, fail lifts or not go for lifts because of just the fear factor that is involved with doing it. So whenever I'm, like, at the gym, like, I go to, like, monkey vaults to practice these things in the foam pit, and, like, I'll put a mat out so it's, like, level with, like, your takeoff, and I can jump it and land. But I think that's also because, obviously, I have so much cushion that if I'm not successful, I won't hurt myself. I have yet to make that transition to the hard floor, because I check in with the coach online. So it's a little bit more difficult when you're not as hands-on with those individuals. So I don't necessarily have a spotter while I'm doing these mm-hmm. things. But from another coach that can do a backflip, he's quite confident that I'd be able to do one because he's seen me like do these things, and he knows how high I can jump and like the the force that I can create. But again, it's just that mental, psychological fear of just being too scared still. Which is a big aspect of training. I mean, people think it's very, very physical, but there is a whole other mental side that comes along with it as well. So
right. And I think that it's funny that you're working on a backflip and I'm working on a handstand, and everything that you're saying, I feel exactly the same. I'm scared. I'm pretty sure I could do it, but I'm so worried I'm gonna, you know, lose the connection and fall on my face and break my neck. And the reasons why people are even asking me, like, why are you even working on something like that? I said, because it's badass. Exactly what you're saying. It looks freaking awesome. And I would love to have that control over my body to be like, here, I'm up. So.
Exactly. And it's like one of those skills, like it's one of those things too, where people, like, for a while, I remember everybody was so like obsessed with like functional training, like how is a handstand functional and all these things. And to be honest, it's not.
Yeah.
When are you ever going to need to do a handstand? You'll never need to. When am I ever going to need to do a backflip? Never. But it's just one of those things where for us both, that's just kind of like the next, like, skill that we want to explore, the next movement that we want to explore, the next way we want to challenge ourselves mentally and physically within this realm. So I don't think there's anything wrong with doing those skills. But again, it's just one of those things of just, I'm learning it because I want to learn it.
Right.
And it's something fun to me. And it seems like it is a good challenge for me to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. So look, we're gonna wrap this up here in a little bit. But I wanted to kind of end this off with a piece of advice from Graham. What would you tell someone who is either bored with their routine or just kind of they feel a little stuck or they haven't had the will to start yet? What's something that you would love to share with?
You have to be passionate about it. So you have to attack it with some vigor. But then you also have to make sure that you are persistent, because you have to be consistent with what you are doing in order to see benefit. You have to have patience, because again, changes don't happen overnight and it takes time to develop skill and new abilities. And then you have to make sure that you are patterning these things into your body. So again, these things become habitual and automatic, but you want to make sure that you're practicing good patterns. And I don't just mean like movement patterns. I just mean like habits, routines, like sleeping, eating, lifestyle. You want to make sure that those things are consistent across the board.
Patience, persistence, passion, and practice. Well, and that's amazing, Graham. I think you've given us so much. I wish I had more time. I hope you'd be willing to come back on the show. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to request you to come back.
Hey, yeah, absolutely, man, for sure. We can definitely set up another one. I'd love to keep this conversation going.
Yeah, I'd love to talk food and a bunch of other stuff with you. So, look, I really appreciate your time coming on the show and sharing your story. And I guess I'll see you in the gym, right?
Yes, sir. See you in the gym, buddy.
Okay, enjoy your tennis. I want to give a big thank you to Graham for taking part in today's show. I love getting together with other trainers and coaches to talk shop, and particularly with Graham. The man is so passionate and clearly loves what he does, and it shows. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. Don't forget to get the free 20-minute bodyweight workout on remixmyfitness.com and come over and say hello in our private Facebook community at bit.ly/remixmyfitness. Neither me or any of the other members bite, I promise. I'll be back on Thursday with week 5 of Dave Stewart's online coaching journey. So until then, if I can borrow from Graham's philosophy here, keep practicing, be patient, be persistent, find your passion. Peace.